This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We speak with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who represents Cleveland, Ohio, a city and a state fighting both high unemployment and home foreclosures.
Ohio is a battleground state in the presidential elections. Kucinich has fought both Republicans and Democrats on issues of war and the economy.
He voted against Paulson's $700 billion bank bailout scheme, and now Congressman Kucinich on fighting the recession and winning the election.
Thank you very much for the invitation to be on your show.
Well, I have to say, over the many years that we've been lucky enough to have you, it has always been our pleasure because we feel singularly that you act with principle in the face of tremendous adversity.
And well, I appreciate that.
Going back, really, I almost feel a little bit like deja vu all over again. I mean, you fought this issue with the banks in Ohio for years and years and years, and now, of course, it's spread to national and international proportions. And maybe I can start with Ben Bernanke visited the Hilt and said, which had not been something the Republicans were initially receptive to, but seemed to be warming to it now, we're going to have another stimulus, or we should have another stimulus package to inject into the economy. And I was wondering if maybe you can take it from there and work backward as to what do you think about the efforts of government at this juncture to deal with the economic crisis?
Well, you know, Bernanke is the representative of a specific subset of Wall Street, the investment banks, the Goldman Sachs of the world. And he's trying to protect the interest of investment banks, hedge funds, and those within a particular constellation that he's moved over the years. He doesn't seem to have a clue about what needs to be done to address the epicenter of our nation's financial crisis, and that is the fact that people have not been able to pay their mortgages, are late in paying, are in default, facing foreclosure, having the potential of holding one of those Alt-A jumbo mortgages that are due to be reset in 09 or 10. We're looking at a colossal meltdown that's just beginning. And Paulson acts as though his main job is to enable the lifeboats to be manned by the speculators while everyone else sinks. We have to have a fix for the homeowners, and one of the things that I recommended early on was for the government to take a controlling interest in the mortgage-backed securities and to direct workouts on interest and principal and extending terms of the loan to keep people in their homes. That's the first thing, and then we need a jobs program behind that.
Well, let's go further and now talk about a jobs program. Is that the same as an economic stimulus, or is that something separate?
Well, a jobs program is truly an economic stimulus. I mean, if we're talking about getting money into people's hands, you prime the pump of the economy by making it possible for people to have good paying jobs. And what I'm doing is promoting two programs. One, a Works Green Administration, which is a WPA type program geared towards green environmental economics, where the government would incentivize the engineering, design, production, the manufacturing, that is, the maintenance and the installation and the maintenance of tens of millions of microtechnologies, wind and solar, that would be installed in homes and businesses, lowering energy costs and lowering the carbon footprint, putting millions of people to work. I mean, we can do this. We also need a new WPA-type program, rebuilding America's bridges, water systems, sewer systems. Our entire infrastructure has been collapsing for years. The American Institute of Architects did a study a few years ago, which said we had over $1 trillion in infrastructure needs. I mean, we can rebuild America, put people back to work, help people save their homes. It's time to move towards a national health care program. I mean, all these things would cause money to start to percolate, and it would percolate upwards instead of this false notion that somehow if you trickle down, it's going to help the mass of Americans, and trickle never gets down.
I wanted to go further on the foreclosure package because I really didn't understand the mechanism that you wanted to attack the foreclosures with. Could you expand on that?
Well, the way that you attack the foreclosure is to understand that we cannot with the current plan, deal with it, because so many of these mortgage-backed securities are fractionated. They're owned by 20, 30 different individuals and or firms. And so what happens is that we need to have the government take a controlling interest in them. The big flaw in the bailout package was that while they sold it as help for homeowners, there was never any ability to be able to get that controlling interest, which would put the government in the driver's seat to direct these workouts. These firms don't have to listen to anyone. The language in the bill was hortatory. It wasn't directive. And so what I favor is a directive language that goes directly to the heart of the program. And a lot of the banks got into trouble because people weren't paying their mortgages. Well, people don't have the money to pay the mortgages. They got into adjusted rates. Some of them were subprimes. Those have mostly cycled out into defaults and into, at this point, abandoned homes. We've got to do something else, though, because we have a whole new range of economic range of foreclosures coming, and we're not prepared to deal with it. The banks are sucking up all this capital. They're hoarding it, much like Japanese banks did when Japan was running into economic trouble over 15 years ago. And we really are in a situation where the greed that was a causative factor in our current dilemma continues. It's not, you know, we haven't really resolved that because, the cops walked off the beat, or they were taken off the beat at the SEC and also at the Fed.
Congressman, over the years, we've certainly grown to expect that the Democrats as a party would be more receptive to the social safety net, to the fabric of social services, albeit some of that was certainly unraveled during the Clinton administration with the Welfare Reform and Reconstruction Act. But why was it so difficult for the Democrats, in your analysis, to grab onto a very digestible, understandable analysis that you're putting forth, that it seemed that the working class, that the American people could absorb? Why have they, too, been so keen ultimately on supporting the $700 billion package, which has so little regulatory effect, et cetera?
No regulatory effect.
No regulatory effect.
Any pretense of it is easily dismissed. The caucus meetings that we were in centered around the election. I mean, as a practical matter, we do have an election coming up, no question about it. People have a right to be concerned about getting reelected. However, in deference to the election, there was a desire to just avoid any deep scrutiny of what we're about, of what the crisis was about, and go along with the leadership's request for the bailout. And frankly, myself and about a half dozen other Democrats, including Brad Sherman of California, Marcy Kaptur of Ohio, Bobby Scott of Virginia, Lloyd Doggett of Texas, and a few others, raised questions in the caucus and said, look, you're not solving the problem at all. This thing is just going to be a bailout for speculators. It's the wrong solution. And we had a bipartisan coalition with, many of the more conservative members of the Republican Party joining us, such as, Ron Paul and others. And so we ended up arguing in the face of an election juggernaut and in the face of our leaders basically saying, well, this is the way you have to go. Now, I thought they were wrong, and I said so. And I said so to their face, and I said so in the caucuses, and I said so on the floor of the House.
You made a segue to the elections in terms of talking about the economics, and I wanted to pursue the election a little bit more. Now, you're in a battleground state, Ohio. The polls are very close, but Ohio is hurting. How come this is so tight there? Shouldn't the Democrats have an advantage in Ohio? And what's going on there?
Of course we should have an advantage in Ohio. Are you kidding? There shouldn't be any chance for a Republican in Ohio. But let me tell you a little bit of history about Ohio. And you have to go back about 15 years. NAFTA passed under Bill Clinton. And there was a real erosion of Democratic strength at that time because people felt let down because it passed with a Democratic president. And then you had the Financial Modernization Act that took down the firewalls in the post-depression period that were erected through the Glass-Steagall Act. And it made it easier for the speculators on Wall Street to have a run at things. Then you had and that was done with the Democratic administration. Then you had the war. People forget, but it was the Democratic Senate that helped make the war possible. And when the Democratic Congress promised in 2006, if we took control, that we'd end the war, well, we won control on the issue of Iraq, and the next thing you know, we kept the war going. I voted against it, challenged my leadership, ran for president a second time because of a principled objection to the Democrats keeping the war going. And now this time, you know, we failed to challenge Bush on his misconduct in office, which I think was a huge mistake. And, of course, I offered several articles of impeachment to give our party a chance to raise the bar of conduct to protect the Constitution. And finally, this bailout, which was led by, you know, the Democrats. So, you know, with that kind of a record, people have a reason to ask, well, you know, what are the Democrats doing? And, you know, I guess it's a question of what kind of Democrat you are. I mean, I'm a kind of an unreconstructed New Deal type Democrat. And I think that I'm a Democrat who stands for peace. And I think that the party can have a viable role in American politics. But we really haven't, I don't feel we really have offered the kind of alternatives that, that will inspire confidence. They might inspire votes, because they're, you know, Republicans aren't presenting a viable alternative, but I think the more than the question about the Democratic Party, we have a problem with the two-party system here, and I would predict that unless there's some substantive changes and real alternatives offered, that within the next decade we're looking at either the emergence of a third party or of independent candidates starting to loom large in elections at every level.
Well, I hope that is indeed the case because, frankly, I think that democracy and the electoral process would be enriched by the introduction of another party in any event, particularly one with some progressive politic. How are we going to prevent, in any event, since both you and Ken have to some degree turned the issues towards the election, the theft of votes? The issue of correcting some of the patterns and abuses that represented or presented themselves in Ohio during the 2004 election, do you feel that will be rectified, that there will be an honest, every person, every vote counted within a very, very critical state like Ohio?
Well, I think there's a better chance this year. The Secretary of State just won a big victory that kept 200,000 people within ballot access. And I think there's a big difference from 2004 when then-Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, who was one of the leaders of the Bush for President campaign, conducted his office in such a way as to systematically suppress the vote in the state and had a lot of cooperation from Republican leaders around the state. I think that that's not going to happen this time. The Acorn registration problems are vastly overblown, and you know, any kind of fraud on election on any side is wrong. But we certainly have to make sure that people's right to vote is exercised and that they aren't frustrated from that right. But you know, never aside from the actual election machinery, the negative campaign ads are ways of trying to suppress the vote. I mean, voter suppression takes many different forms. And if you can get people feeling very bad about an election instead of good, they just won't vote. So, you know, our democracy isn't particularly guaranteed to us. Every 4 years, we have this effort to try to get more people involved. I think we're going to see a lot more this time. But even then, the machinery of an election, which is handled state by state, always needs to be watched. And, you know, wherever you are within the sound of this discussion, I would urge you to find out how the mechanics of the election are being held within your precinct, in your neighborhood, and be mindful of it and be ready to ask questions and protect not only your right to vote, but the right to vote of your friends and neighbors.
And if there is an Obama victory, do you think are there ways to push Obama closer to your position, to our position? Do we need something
from Washington? At this point, his election chances look very promising. And let's say, for the sake of this discussion, that he is, in fact, elected president of the United States. It's going to be incumbent on all of us who want to see America take a new direction to take the responsibility to offer the alternatives and to bring them forward and to push for them and to rally people behind our position, because it's not you know, the president has you know, an executive branch, and that's one part of the government. The Congress is another part, and we have to make sure that that any legislative proposals that would emanate from the White House are those that would respect the broad-based needs of the American people. We could be hopeful that would happen in Obama administration, but nevertheless, it's Congress's responsibility to be able to pass judgment on those things and to work cooperatively if we can find a place to cooperate. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but nevertheless, it's not going to be up to the next president alone. It's going to be up to each one of us to be heard and not simply to let politics be a spectator sport. That's one of the major problems with our polity today.
And if I have to project an Obama win, could I project that perhaps a cabinet position for Dennis Kucinich, and maybe let's make him the real health czar so we could have a single-payer system?
Well, let me tell you, single-payer health care is inevitable in this country. The only question is, when, you know, what are we waiting for? 100 million people to be without health insurance or underinsured, because we already have 50 million underinsured and another 50 million without insurance. We don't have to wait any longer. The next president can look at health care as an opportunity to prime the pump of the economy. If you can recognize that one out of every $3 or $800 billion a year goes for the activities of the for-profit system, a transit to a not-for-profit system, and that doesn't mean government-controlled. It means that the government's a payer. A transit to a not-for-profit system could bring an additional $800 billion that you go into healthcare spending. And you know, no more premiums, copays, and deductibles. Make healthcare available and accessible and affordable. And, you know, this is a democratic society, and it's a basic right. It ought to be. So, yes, it would be helpful. And it may be inevitable that we do this for the sake of businesses as well. You know, with this recession that we're headed into, deep recession, healthcare is going to be one of those public goods that the government can help to circulate more money in the economy and prime the pump and get money into more people's hands through healthcare. You can't do it with this for-profit system, though. So I think the for-profit system is going to hit the wall in the next few years, whether the insurance companies think they can forestall it or not. Everything's going to change. You know, this economy is pushing us in a direction where the only way they can hold the country together and keep it from ripping apart is to be able to come up not with these fake stimulus packages that are essentially a poultice on a gaping wound, but with restructuring of the economy, of government playing a role of spending money into circulation. You know, the banks do that through their fractional reserve system, and the securities companies were doing it through leveraging funds on more than 30 to 1 without any thought as to what happens if they, you know, if the debt started to implode. We have a debt-based economy. We have to get out of this debt trap. We have to make sure that people have the opportunity to have jobs so they can save and have a home. And, you know, these are things that should not be unobtainable. But there's one other thing I want to mention. We've got to stop these military adventures. We've got to get out of Iraq. It's blown a hole in our budget and a hole in our spirit. And we need to start to pull back America's role from being an empire. We have 737 bases in 130 countries. And it's time that we started to look homeward. We can work with the world for security matters, but we cannot any longer pursue this empire. It's reached a point where our nation is collapsing, and we really have to start looking homeward.
Congressman Dennis Kucinich, we thank you for your convictions and the courage of those convictions, and we'll see you at the polls.
Thank you, and anyone interested in more information, please go to Kucinich.us, and thank you so much.
Please do. Thank you, sir.
Being run by a hack, dig the situation that he dug in Iraq. Half the population wants to give him the sack. Now he's looking around for someone else to attack. We need somebody great to get us back on the track, so we're taking it back with Barack. Jack, choo-choo, change to believe and woo-woo. We can't
achieve it, choo-choo. Change to believe it, taking it back with Burak Jack. Now the global warming is a matter of fact. The only real question is just how to react. The new administration needs the guts to enact drastic legislation, leave the planet intact. Can't be messing around with some Republican Mac, so we're taking it back with Burak Jack. Choo-choo, change to believing, woo-woo. We can achieve it, choo-choo. Change to believing, taking it back with Burak Jack.
And now from our friends at Brave New Films.
All this corporate influence should remind you a bit of a previous tale in the McCain saga, his involvement with the Keating Five. Charles Keating was a sort of mentor for John McCain, donating vast sums of money to his Senate campaigns.
Charles Keating helped out Senator McCain a lot in his early part of his career. Senator McCain was the closest of any of the Keating Five to Charles Keating.
Failure eventually cost taxpayers $3.4 billion. He was also a high-powered McCain constituent and friend.
Keating was in trouble. His company, Lincoln Savings and Loan, was making a lot of risky investments, and the government was investigating.
Keating raised $1.3 million for them. They challenged regulators who were investigating his operations.
He called some of his old pals in the Senate to put a little pressure on the government regulator, get him off his back. McCain accepted. Lincoln collapsed, leading to a bailout of $2.8 billion in taxpayer money. Keating went to prison for 4 years. McCain was only chastised on the Senate floor.
People who lost life savings through the scandal, they were pensioners who lost their money because those savings and loans went belly up.
Keating has become a symbol of the worst financial scandal in U.S. history and the worst ethics scandal in the history of the Senate.
He did not learn his lesson. The SNL collapse was a failure of adequate regulation, with the banks running wild, making dodgy investments with high-risk, high-reward margins. If that sounds familiar, it should.
Fast forward 20 years to now, we have a huge mortgage crisis on our hands. It's the result of years and years and years of a deregulatory approach that Senator McCain has supported.
It's the same thing that's happening now, as banks fail, as our housing market collapses. And the people responsible for this new crisis are the ones McCain has surrounded himself with. Men like Phil Graham and his banking lobbyists. He's offering the same kind of deregulatory policies that led to the banking collapse in the early 90s.
Mr. McCain would take the worst economic policies from the Bush administration and put them on steroids. We would get not only the same that we've had for the last 7 years, we would get actually the same, just a little degree worse than we had before.
Money from some regular Macs. Doesn't take a penny from the wackity packs. Bringing folk together, he's a man with a knack. He'll supply the hope and inspiration we lack. Cause he's the best we got, and did I mention he's black? And we're taking it back with Burak Jack. Choo choo, change to believing, woo woo. We can achieve it, choo choo. Change to believing, taking it back with Burak Jack.
And Taking It Back with Burak was performed by the Will Gallison Orchestra.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
Buildingbridgesradio.org.